Hi, this is Chaz from the Road Gunner Podcast, also known as the Unnamed Trucker. When I want to listen to a show with practical information from an everyday guy who can't carry a cop just like me, I listen to my good friend Bob Main. Now on with the show. Take it away, Bob.
The eternal Thompson Gunner, still wandering through the night. Now it's 10 years later, but it still keeps up the fight. In Ireland, in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Berkeley, Petty Hearst heard the burst of Roland's Thompson gun and bought
it. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 346. Thank you for the intro from Chaz Murray of the Road Gunner Podcast, and from Clay from the Skilled Gentleman Podcast last week. I appreciate you guys recording those intros for me. You have tuned into a practical show. I'm a practical guy, and I like to talk about guns, firearms, Second Amendment rights, training classes, shooting competitions, interview people that know a whole lot more than I do about this subject. But I'm just an everyday guy, and I don't have an interview for you this week, but I think I got some great topics on AASA and shooting upside down. So that's the discussion this week. I just want to let you know a little bit about a few things that have been going on recently with me and with the podcast and things like that. Recently went over to MD Anderson in Houston, MD Anderson Cancer Center, where basically the doctors that together with the good Lord above and the doctors at MD Anderson and some help from my local oncologist, they saved my life a little over a year ago. And wow, how time flies. I began the year, pretty much started the year at MD Anderson going through an autologous stem cell transplant. I'll explain a little bit more about that later. And that was to get my body to start producing clean cells instead of cancer cells. And praise God, here it is, today's December 2nd, I'm still cancer-free. Actually, I've been cancer-free since the day after my brain surgery in 2014, which was the 27th, I believe, or 26th of September. See, the surgery, I guess, messed up my memory. I can't remember exactly which day. It was one of those 2 days, 26th or the 27th of September, 2014. And ever since that day, all my tests, all my cancer tests have been negative. Now, I got to go back in January, either mid to late January, and have four more tests, cancer screen tests, to see if I'm still cancer-free. So keep praying for me. I appreciate that. Appreciate all the prayers that all of you have done. I can tell you what, I would not be talking to you and doing this podcast today if it wasn't for the power of the Lord above and also the very, very talented doctors at MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston, Texas, and Dr. Allison Haroff, my local oncologist at Cancer Care Centers of South Texas in San Antonio. Thank you, thank you, thank you for giving me the gift of life. Thank you to all of them. Okay, let's see. What else do I want to talk about in this introduction? I'm in the Handgun World mobile studio cruising down Interstate 10, taking advantage of some windshield time to talk to you. Hope everybody had a real good Thanksgiving. Hope you had a good time getting together, family, eating food. I've received an email from one listener who was alone on Thanksgiving, and I'm real sorry to hear about that. I was alone the day after Thanksgiving for a while, and I don't want to talk about that right now, but I will talk about that at another time. Everything's okay right now, though, so don't be worrying too much about me. I also want to say I'm looking for someone to design a new logo for the Handgun World podcast. If you're good at doing that, if you're good at graphic stuff and you want to design a new logo, go to handgunworld.com first of all. Take a look at the logo I have on the website now and look at the size of it and how it fits into my WordPress blog and things like that. If you're good with that kind of stuff, I'd love to get some submissions from some of you to create a new logo from me. And even if you need a little bit of money for it, just let me know if it's a reasonable amount. I'm willing to pay some money for somebody to design a new logo for me. And, of course, these intros, if you want to record a little small intro like Chaz from the Roadgunner podcast or Clay from the Skilled Gentleman podcast. Hey, that's another good podcast you should listen to, the Skilled Gentleman podcast. Good stuff about survival and preparedness and all that. Excellent, good stuff there. I would love to get an introduction from you. You don't have to be a podcaster to send me an introduction. If you're a listener, you can call in the voicemail and do it, 210-646-1727. Or if you know how to use a recorder or recording software or whatever, you can do it that way too. And then email it on over to me at bob@handgunworld.com or handgunworld@gmail.com. Okay, some news about my firearms or gun carrying. I recently bought a Walther PPQ M2. I bought it from Ben Branham at Sparks Firearms in San Antonio. So I'll put out a little plug for Sparks Firearms in San Antonio, actually over in Universal City, Texas. I think the best place in San Antonio to buy guns, period. Not just because Ben works there, but a little bit because Ben works there. No, actually, Steve Sparks' prices are excellent. His selection is excellent. He's a big participator in gun shows and just an all-around good guy. And his staff over there, and of course, so is Ben Branham from the Modern Self-Protection podcast, and my good friend Ben and my co-instructor at the Beyond Concealed Carry classes that I'm going to take a little bit of a break from. But not a complete break. Ben and I are putting together a Houston class because there's a student that has a bunch of people in Houston that he wants us to teach. And it's going to be open to other students. Once we can formally announce that, we'll announce that. And then there's only one other class that I will show up to teach. If we can put it together, I'll announce that. Otherwise, 2016 for me is going to be all about training myself, making me better. I got to make me better. I'm not satisfied with my skill level. I've signed up for Tom Givens' class in Baton Rouge, Louisiana in March. And I think it's the 19th and 20th of March. Tom Givens' two-day combative pistol class. I've signed up for that. Always wanted to take one of his classes, March 19th and 20th. Why don't you join me? I know there's at least one listener, maybe two, that are going to be joining me over at Tom Givens' class. And he didn't pay me or encourage me to advertise it. I don't even think Tom Givens knows I'm talking about this on my podcast. But I'm signed up for it. I'm fired up about going to it. So that's why I'm talking about it. It's going to make me a better shooter. And, of course, John Payne from Suarez International, Gabe Suarez's fine company, he in May is coming to San Antonio to teach a two-day M4 or AR-15 rifle class. And I'm really excited about that. Other than a couple of short rifle classes that Ben's taught, I haven't been to another rifle class. So this is going to be a good experience for me. If you want to join me at that, you do not have to have an M4 or AR-15 rifle. You don't even have to have a scope or a red dot. But it probably should be a semi-automatic rifle. A lever action or bolt action might have a hard time keeping up with the class. But pretty much any kind of a semi-automatic rifle, bring it and join me at that. You can find that at handgunworld.com. It says the M4 rifle gunfighting class. John Payne from Suarez International is teaching that. So that's what I'm doing so far this year to train me. I competed in AASA action shooting a weekend before last. I'll be talking about that in the main topic. So that's going to be I'm going to be talking about that in this episode. So that's some competition that I did. I plan on in December going to, well, this is December. I plan on going to IDPA at Cedar Ridge Range with Texas Tactical soon. And I plan on going to several of their matches. to get back more into competition shooting with my Walther PPQ and with my Glock 19. Those are the two primary guns that I want to compete with and get a little bit better at competing with both those guns, my Glock 19 and the IDPA CCP, which is Compact Carry Pistol Division. And also the Walther PPQ M2 4-inch barrel fits into that box and that division nicely, the IDPA CCP division. Kind of thinking about getting a Walther PPQ 45, but I want to run my PPQ 9mm through the test and through the paces first, make sure I like it. So far I like it, but in the main topic coming up, there is something that might concern me just a little bit about the Walther PPQ pistol. Listen for that. That's coming up probably in about 2 or 3 minutes. Well, that's probably coming up in about 20 or 25 minutes after I talk about one of my other main topics, which is AASA competition. But the Walther PPQ seems like a pretty cool 45 handgun, 45 caliber handgun, and I want to get another 45. Just because. Not that I believe in carrying a 45, and not that I believe that 45 ACP is a bad caliber. It's just not my preference. I like 9mm pistols with super quality ammo and higher capacity. You know, I'm going to give some credit to Michael Bain at Downrange Radio, another great podcast I like to listen to a lot. Michael Bain was talking recently, I think it was one or two other episodes. You know, he's talking about how he's reevaluating his carry pistols after the Paris terror attacks. And it's kind of got me thinking, and every time one of these events happens, it gets me to reevaluate, and I go back to carrying my higher capacity gun, because I think about myself, you know, and think, well, what happens if I'm in one of these terrorist attack situations? I might need more than, you know, 5 or 6 or 7 rounds to get out of that situation. And then some time goes by and I start getting lazy and carrying my shield or carrying my Glock 43 or Car PM9. And then something happens again and I don't get lazy anymore and I start getting worried and carry a higher capacity gun again. Am I describing you? Does that sound a little familiar? You know, it's easy to get lazy, isn't it? So I'm going to try not to do that quite so much. But I'm going to be honest, and sometimes I do. All right. With that said, that takes care of the intro. How about just a very quick sound effect or very quick public service announcement, and I'll get into the main topic.
Hello. I'm Rob Morse from the Polite Society Podcast. I took a Beyond Concealed Carry Advanced class with Ben Branham, Bob Main, Chaz Murray, and Tracy Thronberg. I wish every concealed carrier took a class like this one. The class covered both basic shooting skills and advanced topics. Skills like shooting from unusual positions, shooting with one hand while moving, and shooting when in contact with the target. Those are the real skills you want if you were ever forced to use your firearm. I was impressed because I'm not the perfect student. No, far from it. I took the class because I needed competent instructors to teach me and correct my many mistakes. They did that with professional skill. I plan to train with them again.
Okay, this segment, I am broadcasting from the Handgun World Mobile Studio on the freeway returning home from a business trip. And this segment's actually being recorded on Wednesday. I think this is the 2nd of December. Anyway, what I want to talk about was weekend before last. And, you know, this podcast comes out on Monday. So you're going to get this podcast released on Monday the 7th. I'm talking about not just this past weekend, but the weekend before. I had a chance to go shoot an AASA match. What that means is American Action Shooting Association. And if you want to look them up, AmericanActionShooting.com. That's AmericanActionShooting.com. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can easily find that if you just go to this episode, which I believe this is episode 346. So anyway, American Action Shooting Association. Ted Bonnet is a two-time world champion, maybe three-time world champion, AASA shooter. He is the local club president. I think he's also one of the founders of AASA. They got a pretty interesting history, and I really like the match. I like that a lot. This is what I like a whole lot about it. First of all, the scoring system is very simple. If you can count to three, basically, that's pretty much what you're going to end up having to do the whole time. 1 second, 2 second, 3 seconds. So as long as you put your shots, this is the way I believe it to be true, and if somebody knows better, correct me, but it was the first time in a very long time I shot AASA. If you put it in the center ring, which I think is about an 8-inch group, then it counts as 0 second penalty. Slightly outside the ring is a 1 second penalty. Slightly outside that is a 2 second penalty, and misses are 3 seconds penalty. So 1, 2, 3. That's easy. So basically, don't miss. Now, AASA seems to stress accuracy a little bit more than IDPA. So I kind of like that. What do you think? I kind of like a competition match that is action shooting oriented. In other words, you got to draw from the holster. You got to have good gun handling skills. You got to be safe. Some of the stages you got to be shooting on the move or drawing on the move, which is highly important. I've talked about that many times. And you have to shoot multiple targets of different colors and shapes and things like that. So it's action shooting oriented. But it also stresses accuracy a little bit more. I mean, like with IDPA, for example, until they change the scoring system, and I understand they're going to be changing it again, possibly. They're going to be, I guess, increasing the penalty for less accurate shooting. That's what IDPA, from what I understand, is going to be doing. And actually, it sounds like IDPA might, not quite sure if it's been passed yet, but the higher-ups in IDPA have been talking about it. I think they're going to make their scoring system a little bit more like AASA. So basically, I think if you're out of the zero down section of the IDPA target, you're going to be assessed a 1 second or a 2 second or 3 second penalty. Now, what do you think of that? I think that's a pretty good thing, don't you? Now, some high-level shooters, it's probably not going to bother them. Because, hey, you know, they're a high-level shooter. The vast majority of all of their hits are going to be where they should be. They're going to be in the zero penalty range. So, you know, fine. Or maybe, I don't know, they might gripe a little bit more. Because those that they do drop out of the zero down in IDPA, they might complain a little bit more. Because they're going to be penalized. Instead of 1 point down, which is actually equal to a half a second down. In other words, half a second added to your time. It might be a full second added to your time. So they might grumble a little bit more. But you know what? The really, really good shooters that can practice thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds per month, and they're at, you know, like master or, you know, grandmaster level shooters, that's their classification, they won't be hit all that hard. It's people like you and me. It's the more average type shooter. And of course, you know, a lot of you different people listen to this podcast. So you might be a listener right now, and you're a master class IDPA or a master class, grandmaster class IPSC or USPSA shooter. I'm primarily not talking to you, but for those of us that are the more everyday people that show up for these matches, you know, I didn't find the AASA scoring to be all that bad. So if it's kind of a taste of what's coming from IDPA, I didn't find it to really be all that bad. What was cool about this most recent match is everything we shot was steel. So what was really nice was you basically hit or miss in this particular match. Just this one. You either hit the steel or you missed it. If you missed it, I believe you were assessed a 3 second penalty. If not, if you hit it, you hit it. So you had a little bit more leeway to be a little less accurate because some of the pieces of steel that we were shooting at were bigger than the ring that you've got to hit to not suffer any penalty seconds. And, of course, I love shooting steel, and you should like shooting steel, too, if you shoot a lot of it, because you get that instant feedback, you get that sound if you've made a hit. So I kind of like the AASA scoring system because it's simple, and you're going to have to be accurate with your shots. Speed and accuracy. I mean, right? Isn't that what really wins a fight? Speed, accuracy. Speed and accuracy. You got to have good technique, but at the end of the day, if you have really good technique, if you look cool doing something, but you can't hit the target, or you can't do it relatively quickly, well, then guess what? You probably aren't going to win the gunfight, are you? The other thing I like about AASA rules is we got to load our magazines to full capacity. Load magazines to full capacity. That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. After all, isn't that how we carry on the street? Those of you that are carrying your guns, and all of you listening to this, you should be carrying your guns. Aren't you fully loading your magazines? Well, maybe you're downloading them by one. There are some pistols, if you fully load a magazine and you've got a round in the chamber, then you might not be able to seat the magazine properly. All right, so maybe that kind of a pistol you have to download by one. But primarily I'm carrying a Glock 19. And that's going to have 15 rounds in the mag, and it's going to have one in the chamber. And I'm carrying it with a full 16 rounds on board. If I'm carrying my Smith & Wesson Shield 9mm, I'm 98% of the time carrying an 8-round magazine and one in the chamber. So, you know, unlike some divisions of IDPA, for example, where you have to download and only start with 8 rounds in the mag, one in the chamber, or 10 rounds in the mag, one in the chamber, we got to use fully loaded magazines in AASA. And we got to reload whenever necessary. So we picked the time to reload. I like that. Because probably in a real gunfight, now, in full disclosure, folks, I've never been in a real gunfight. I've had Ben Branham on my show many, many times. A lot of you have attended training classes that Ben and I have taught. Ben's been in a real gunfight, many real gunfights. And if I've heard him say it once, I've heard him say it 50 times. That you're going to reload when it's necessary. You're going to reload when you feel like you got the need, when you have the need to reload. Okay? You always want to have as much ammo in the gun as you possibly can. So you can reload as necessary. And what's really cool is the kind of reloads that you're allowed to do in AASA, in my humble opinion, are the kind of reloads you should practice a lot. And is probably the way it's going to be in real life. You're probably going to do a speed reload. What's a speed reload, for those of you that might not know? A speed reload is, you feel like you're running low on ammunition. You drop the magazine, and yes, you drop a magazine with ammunition in it. I know that that's controversial. Some of you might say, oh, Bob, you shouldn't do that. Don't ever drop a magazine on the ground with ammunition in it. You know, in a real gunfight, when my life is on the line, the stink has really hit the fan bad. Do I want to be counting my rounds and trying to figure out how many rounds are in my magazine before I drop it or not? Or do I want to make sure I've got an empty magazine before I reload? Okay? Or people say, well, you should retain that magazine, Bob, if it's got ammunition in it. Do I really want to be fumbling around trying to stick a magazine back in my pocket when split seconds count because I'm being fired at or somebody's coming after me with a knife or a baseball bat or whatever it is that they're trying to kill me with? Do I really want to be messing around with fumbling around trying to stick a magazine back in my pocket, back in a mag carrier, stow it somewhere? Of course not. I'm going to get that magazine out of my pistol. I don't care if it hits the ground, my foot, my leg, whatever. I want it out of my gun. okay? And I want to get a fresh magazine of full ammo back in that Glock 19, so I got another 16 rounds to fight with if I need to. Does that make sense? So all this garbage about reloading rules, it's, hey, with AASA, reload is necessary. Do a speed reload. It doesn't matter if there's one in the chamber or not. Get it out. Stick a fresh magazine in there. Keep on shooting. Finish the job. That's what I like about AASA. It kind of reminds me of a competition match when I lived up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area at Dallas Pistol Club. I used to go to Dallas Pistol Club a lot. And they had a match called Real World Gun. Real World Gun. And it's kind of like AASA, American Action Shooting Association. The rules and the way that they approach it was kind of cool. So I like that. Anyway, look up Ted Bonnet, B-O-N-N-E-T, Ted, B-O-N-N-E-T, Ted Bonnet. Google his name. You'll learn a lot about his history. Very, very good match director. He shot with us. He's a pretty good instructor, too. He spent a lot of time giving us shooting tips during each stage. And I thought that was really good. I kind of like that. You know, never had a match director or even a safety officer. Well, I take that back. Never had a match director in a shooting match give me shooting tips. I have had safety officers do that before. But it's rare. You know, most of them are just there making sure that everybody's safe, which Ted did a great job. But so if you're going to basically shoot AASA in San Antonio, then you want to try to be on Ted Bonnet's squad. They shoot every fourth Saturday at a place to shoot, and I think they shoot three Saturdays a month at the bullet hole range in San Antonio. Let's see, what else do I want to say about AASA? I think that's about all. There's four different divisions, and what I was in was the semi-auto division. How about that? I was in the semi-automatic division. Does that mean I was competing with some race guns? Yeah. Yeah, I was competing with some race guns with my Glock 19. Now, mine's not all raced out. You know, mine's the one that I put up on Facebook that I got the Wilson Combat Barrel in it, and I've got the grip job done. Now, it's not grip reduced, but I had the finger grooves taken off, and I had a nice stippling job done on it, and a double undercut trigger guard. By the way, people ask me, why do you have the double undercut trigger guard? Well, the first undercut is for my strong hand, so I get a better grip, and the second undercut is for my support hand, or my other shooting hand. Both of them kind of give a little extra place for my fingers to rest and give me just a little bit higher grip on the pistol, which does help with control, in my opinion. So go to Facebook, go to the Handgun World Podcast Facebook page, which is facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast, facebook.com/handgunworldpodcast, and go through the pictures there. You'll see the Glock 19 that I've got in there, that I got kind of fancied up a little bit, but it's no race gun. Nah, not like some of the, I think it was one person there with an STI race gun, and somebody else with another fancy Super Duper 1911 fancy. So I was shooting against them too, you know, with their fancy slick triggers and all that other kind of stuff. I wasn't shooting against anybody with an optic in my division, but, you know, the stock auto or the auto, I don't know if it was stock auto, I think it was just semi-automatic division. But I definitely am going to shoot more AASA. I kind of like that. I'm going to be shooting IDPA as well. Not much USPSA or IPSC. It's not real big here around San Antonio or Austin. And I'm not that much of a huge fan of it anyway. I kind of like IDPA. It seems to be a little less gamerish. Maybe there's another word that I just made up. I almost kind of make up a word almost every podcast, huh? You ever notice that? Gamerish. Well, anyway, I think you get the point. Not quite as many gamers in IDPA as it seems like in USPSA. Oh, I will say this. There's a negative of AASA, a little bit of a negative, and that is they do allow you to game it a little bit more. Like, for example, they don't stress the use of cover like IDPA. And I was shooting it like I was shooting IDPA. I shot this match where I was using cover. I was making sure that 50% of my body was behind cover. In fact, Ted even noticed it. I heard him when I was shooting on one stage pointing out to some other people. He said, hey, look at Bob use cover. He's using cover. He's making sure 50% of his body is below cover. We had one stage where at a place to shoot at the Cowboy Action Range, there's this big, huge Cowboy Action prop, and it's got two large windows and a large doorway in the middle. And we had to shoot through both windows and the doorway, the fake doorway. It wasn't a door installed, but it was a doorway. And I was doing it the correct way that Ben taught me to use to place my footwork, and he teaches us all that in Beyond Concealed Carry and Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. A lot of gamerish people in IDPA will kind of lean out around cover, and I think it makes you less accurate and slower if you do the leaning. Some people can perfect it, but if you make sure that your outside foot is forward instead of your inside foot from the cover, you don't have to lean. All you got to do is just kind of shift your body. You don't have to lean quite so much. Which, how many of you ever noticed that it's kind of hard to lean, especially to your weak side? So it's a lot easier, I thought. But I was shooting it using cover properly, and I was slicing the pie. In other words, I shot the targets as I saw them. You don't have to do that in AASA. You don't get a procedural penalty. That's, at least for this match, they weren't stressing it. So I thought that was kind of good, that you didn't have to, you know, I mean, excuse me, kind of bad, sorry. I thought that was kind of a negative, that I'd like to see people use cover a little bit more. And then I was also practicing my real-world tactical stuff, where I was doing after-action assessments after each string of shooting. In other words, I was checking 360 degrees around me. And by the way, you can do it without turning around. All right? You can do your 360-degree after-action assessment without completely turning around. As a matter of fact, I think I'm going to record a video and put that up on the Shooters Club as to how to do that. And so I was doing that, you know, checking left and then checking up over my left shoulder for other bad guys when I'm done shooting, and then checking right and up over my right shoulder so that I could also see what was going on behind me, and doing that, and then reloading before putting the gun back in the holster. In my humble opinion, that's the proper way to do things. I first learned all that stuff from John Payne at Suarez International, taking Close Range Gunfighting and Close Range Gunfighting 2 and Close Range Gunfighting 3. And I was glad that when I teamed up with Ben Branham, and for the past 3.5 years been teaching a lot of classes with Ben at Modern Self-Protection Podcast, I was glad to know that Ben was a big proponent of that kind of tactical stuff, simple tactical stuff. You know, we're not being super cool ninja type tactical folks. That's common sense. That's common sense. Everyday carry, self defense type stuff. Okay? Please don't have the mindset that all you're going to have to do is just stand in one spot, never move, draw your gun, fire 3 times at the bad guy, and it's all over with. Oh my goodness, please don't think that. Please don't just think that. There's a whole lot more to defending yourself with a gun than that. You know, recently I was talking to a coworker of mine that it probably is not as pro-gun as I am in terms of citizens carrying guns. And he said something that was interesting. He said, a concern I have, Bob, is the people that are walking around carrying guns and they don't have any training. In other words, and he said they don't have any military or law enforcement training. And, of course, I wasn't going to go there. I wasn't going to, you know, talk about how many military, ex-military, and law enforcement people come through my training classes that I've taught or that I've been involved in, because a lot of them do, right? A lot of them don't get the kind of training that the ordinary citizen thinks that law enforcement and military get. No offense. No offense to my brothers and sisters in law enforcement. No offense to my brothers and sisters that are either active duty military or ex-military. But a lot of you with handguns don't get the kind of training with handguns that people think that you do. You know, the military spends a lot of time using rifles, but from what I understand, talking to a lot of military men and women that come back, they don't, they say they didn't get a whole lot of training with handguns. And, you know, law enforcement with hit ratios of 20%, I kind of scratch my head if they're hitting 20 or 25 or even, let's give them the benefit of the doubt. Let's say 30 to 35% hit ratio. How much training do you really think that they're actually getting? You know, the law enforcement people that only show up to qualify, what is it, once every 6 months or something like that, and that's the only shooting that they ever do? Yeah, a lot of them are that way. Now, not all my brothers and sisters that are in law enforcement. Okay, and by the way, most of you know, I'm not ex-law enforcement, or I'm not ex-military. I'm not an ex-gunsmith or anything like that. Okay, but so I say brothers and sisters because, hey, we're brothers and sisters in Christ, and that's the way I talk about it. All right? But what I am trying to point out is that a lot of them only show up to the range a couple times a year. And that's it, because they have to do that to qualify. And that's all they ever shoot. They don't go to competition matches, they don't take training classes and things like that. But anyway, he said, my coworker said, I'm concerned about other people walking around with guns that have no training. You know, I got to say, it's a valid concern. It's a valid concern, and it's something I've been talking about a long time. It's not something new that I've expressed a concern about. Now, you know, please don't get on me. Please don't start hammering me like I've been hammered in the past. But, Bob, training should not be required to carry a gun because it's our Second Amendment right. Okay, you're right, folks. You're right. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and concede. You are correct. I just think it's a super bad, bad idea to carry a gun without getting at least some basic safety training. How about that? In other words, proving that you can handle your gun safely. And when I mean handle your gun safely, I mean know how to carry it safely. Know how to draw it and fire a couple of shots on target safely. Less than a couple of seconds. And not put your finger on the trigger. And not have an accidental discharge or negligent discharge. That's what I'm talking about. And making the four rules of gun safety reflexive. And being able to move and then draw and get out of the line of fire. You know, basic stuff like that. And prove that you can do it safely. All right, it's a bad, bad idea to walk around carrying any kind of a gun without that kind of training. Would you agree with me on that simple premise? I hope so, or that simple tenet. You know, let's talk about this again for like maybe a couple minutes more. You know, what you have to do to get your concealed carry license is not training. So many people think that. It's not training. It's basically what your state government says that you have to be able to know to, in their mind, carry a gun. So they're really forcing you to ask some permission, first of all. You're having to ask permission and pass a test, and not all the tests are the same because some states don't even have a test, and those states that do have a test and a shooting qualification, they're not all the same. That's probably one of the reasons why you don't see national reciprocity, because you have all these different states with all these different standards of what you have to do to be able to carry a gun. Wouldn't it be nice if there was one standard, like one standard in all 50 states? And if you met that standard, you could carry in all 50 states without exception. Of course, except where it's illegal. Like, for example, federal buildings, courthouses, inside of school buildings, and places where it's legally posted. And again, I'm going to stress the word legally posted. Because in some states, like in the great gun-friendly state of Texas, where I live, even though I'm just a Yankee with a gun, born in New York City, raised in Wisconsin, I now live in this great gun-friendly state of Texas, which is going to have open carry in less than 30 days, but they can legally post no carrying on their premises. And we now have two legal signs, I believe. two legal no-gun signs. One is the 30-06 sign. How about that, 30.06, which says you cannot conceal carry in this establishment. And the other is the 30.07 sign for the statute number, says you cannot open carry in this establishment. And those signs and those signs only carry the weight of law in the great state of Texas. And those signs have to be a certain size, certain font size, certain color, displayed in a certain portion of the building, and so on and so forth. But wouldn't it be nice if there was just one standard and we could carry everywhere in all 50 states? That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. Now, some of you are saying, Bob, nope, that's not the way it should be. The way it should be is constitutional carry or permitless carry everywhere. All right, I get it. Yep, true. But how about first things first, okay? How about national reciprocity, carrying in all 50 states, one standard to meet, and that's it. One type of background check to meet, and that's it. All right? And no background checks for buying a gun. I mean, excuse me, I said that wrong. Okay, no more background checks than what we already have for buying a gun. We got enough background checks. That's not the problem. Ignore these knucklehead, nimrodded politicians that are saying we need more background checks, because that's going to solve the violence problem we have in the USA. Yep, it is. Matter of fact, there's all kinds of empirical data, right? They got tons of it, don't they? There's all kinds of data. You can just all do a quick, simple Google search, and you can find all the empirical data that you need to justify that more background checks than what we already have will immediately stop or drastically reduce all of this gun violence, won't it? Yeah, right. Gun violence. People violence. And you know what? The extra background check won't stop the people violence. It's not gun violence. It's people violence that use a tool to commit their violence. And they can use any tool they want. They can make a bomb. They could use a gun. They can use a knife. They can use a vehicle. They can use an airplane. How about that? Hey, guess what? They did that once. They used four airplanes. Okay, there's all kinds of tools that the people who want to commit people violence can and do use. Extra background checks above and beyond what we already have ain't going to work, folks. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's not going to enable the bad guys or the people committed to people violence. Because after all, as I've been closing the show the last several weeks, evil does not exist in the holster. Evil exists in the hearts of men and some women. Okay, so I got off on a little tangent there. Sorry. AASA. So I didn't like the fact that they didn't stress the proper use of cover. But, yeah, you know, you can't have everything. I thought it was a match that was more real-world gun, just like the real-world gun match at Dallas Pistol Club that I think they have up there once a month in Dallas, Texas. And that was kind of cool. Okay, enough about AASA competition. Let me talk about an email that I recently got. Some emails I talk about, but I get so many emails I couldn't do enough podcasts in a week to address all the emails I got. But I do want to talk about Scott from Colorado. Scott from Colorado sent me an email, and the subject line said Walther PPQ. Well, that got my attention because I recently bought a Walther PPQ M2 9mm version. Sweet gun. Really, really like it. I just put up on my public YouTube channel. If you search Handgun World on YouTube, you'll see my YouTube channel. Please look at all my videos up there. I just did a quick shooting review of Tracy Thronberg's Walther PPQ 9mm 5-inch model. So check that out. But anyway, Scott from Colorado says, Bob, I think you might want to try shooting your new PPQ upside down. Hey, now, you know, I'm going to continue on with this, but I want to say something. That's something you should train a little bit also. Shoot your gun upside down. Huh? What are you talking about, Bob? Shoot a handgun upside down. Well, that's what I'm talking about. shoot a handgun upside down. Be careful with it. Pull the trigger with your pinky or with any finger that you can make it work. Be careful, though. Practice this dry fire. Get your handgun. Double check that it's unloaded. Turn it upside down. Grab it upside down with your strong hand. And take a look at what your hand is doing and how it might be covering the back of the slide. So you got to be real careful. That slide can come right back and slap you in the hand pretty fiercely. There is a certain way to hold and shoot a handgun upside down. When I took CRG 3, Close Range Gunfighting 3, from Suarez International a few years back that John Payne taught, we worked on some upside down shooting. And you might have to do it. You never know. You know, again, I always say, how do you know that you're going to always get the perfect grip? What if you have to draw your gun with either your weak hand or your other shooting hand, the one that you're not used to shooting with all the time, that you're not used to making your strong hand? What if you got to draw your gun out of your holster with your left hand, say you're a right-hander, or with your right hand, say you're a left-hander, and you got to shoot it that way up, side down. Oh, Bob, that's crazy talk. Nope. It's not crazy talk. May not always have a perfect grip on the gun. Hey, what about those of you who carry XD pistols or 1911s and you got to shoot those upside down? What about depressing the grip safety on a gun that has a grip safety if you're shooting it upside down? Ho-ho, how about that, huh? You might not always be able to depress that grip safety. Hence, another reason why I don't like to carry a pistol that has a grip safety. But I will digress. Anyway, Scott from Colorado says, many police agencies claim that Walther handguns do not meet police specs in that regard. He's talking about shooting them upside down. He says, try it, you'll see. Just a thought I would let you know, considering that you own a Walther PPQ and you carry it for self-protection. Well, I don't carry it yet, Scott. I don't carry a Walther PPQ M2 yet for protection. A few reasons why I don't carry. Not because I don't like the gun. Number one, I haven't ordered a holster yet for it from Jason Christensen. And also, I'm going to get another one from CompTac. I'm going to get an IDPA competition holster from CompTac because I do want to shoot that in the CCP division. And, you know, sometimes I want to game it. And if I'm going to game it, I get a gaming holster. A gamerish holster, right? I get one of those kinds of holsters. And I go shoot IDPA because I'm playing the game. And then, of course, I'm going to get a Cobra outside the waistband all Kydex holster from Jason Christensen for the PPQ. But I haven't done it yet, so I'm not carrying it yet. I also haven't given that round or that gun a 1,000-round trigger job. Haven't given it my, now, I guess now famous 1,000-round trigger job. Everybody's talking about it now. Bob Main from the Handgun World Podcast, his 1,000-round trigger job. I did a whole episode on it, folks, one time, and it's not just because your gun needs the 1,000-round trigger job. You also need the 1,000-round trigger job. Get what I mean? You need it, too. It'll make you a better shooter. So, Scott from Colorado, thank you for the email. Thank you very much. But I'm not carrying the gun yet. I am going to practice shooting it upside down. I am glad, Scott, that you sent me that email. The next time I take that gun to the range, I'm going to shoot it upside down. And I'm going to put it through a couple magazines of upside down shooting and see what this means. If you got some more information or if anybody else has some information on what exactly are these police standards that the PPQ is not meeting in being able to shoot it upside down. And I've always kind of wondered why, since the PPQ is such a cool gun, what its limitations were. I don't know. Maybe that's a limitation. I don't know. Since I'm on the subject of the Walther PPQ M2 version, the M2 version is the one with the push-button American-style mag release, not the European trigger guard mag release, which some people say they like better. I don't. One of the limitations are, or is, a limitation is, that aftermarket sights are not as available as they are for like a Glock or an M&P or an XD or a Ruger. Now, Tracy Thronberg had Dawson Precision sights on hers, and I really like her setup. She had a plain black rear and a red fiber optic front. I think I'd like a green fiber optic front, but that's what she had. And they make those for the Walther PPQ. I haven't been able to check what other kind of sights are out there and available for it. That seems to be one of the limitations. Modifying that gun does not seem to be as easy as modifying some of the other polymer handguns or even the 1911s. Oh, man, how many different ways can you modify a 1911? It seems to be endless, isn't it? And that's one of the great things about a 1911. That's one of the really cool things about a 1911. You can modify it so many different ways. Those of you that have 1911s, let me ask you a question. Isn't that cool? That's one really, really nice thing. So, but is that a limitation? The Walther PPQ is so well designed and so well built. Oh, man, and super super accurate and incredible trigger. Well, okay, I can be super accurate with that gun. Somebody has corrected me in an email before, and I can't remember the gentleman's name, but I actually thank him for doing it. You know, he basically suggested that I not call a gun accurate because almost all decent guns are inherently accurate or accurate enough for what their purpose is. And mainly it's a question of whether the shooter can be accurate. And yeah, we all know you can take a $2,000 1911 and put it in the hands of a novice shooter, and the novice shooter probably won't shoot any better than the $480 polymer pistol that you put in the hands of a world champion shooter. Okay? The pistol costs one-fourth as much, but the shooter is that much better that he's more accurate than the novice shooter with the expensive gun. Alright, so anyway, I think we all get the point. With all of this kind of stuff said, just the end of this segment, not the end of this episode. Let me take a break, and I'll be right back.
England, Wales, Scotland, Australia, Canada, and 12 other industrialized and largely disarmed nations have higher violent crime rates than the U.S. This is according to a Dutch Ministry of Justice multinational survey. According to that survey, England and Australia are twice as vicious as America, with higher rates of robberies, muggings, and assaults. Switzerland, a well-armed nation, has a violent crime rate about the same as ours. Disarmed countries are dangerous countries, and America's few disarmed cities are the most dangerous in the Union. This is no coincidence. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Now, a couple clarifications from the last segment. I got about another 6 or 7 minutes here to talk to you, and I'm really doing my best to keep my weekly shows down to between 45 and 50 minutes to respect your time. A non-renewable asset is time. Isn't that true? Okay, a couple corrections. IDPA. Magazine capacity. Not really a correction, but a clarification that I want to talk about. I see no reason why everybody has to download their magazines in stock service pistol division or compact carry pistol division. I don't understand why we have to start with 8 or 10 rounds. You know, and people say to me, well, Bob, it's because in some states, you know, you're only allowed 10-round magazines. So we want to make the competition fair for those people. Hey, wait a minute. All right. Why isn't my idea fair? How about people who live in states where there's a 10-round magazine limit? How about they are forced to download their mags? And people who live in states that are not bound by that limit don't have to download their mags. Huh? What about that? Wouldn't that be fair? Everybody competing over in California is all going to have 10 rounds in their mag, and everybody competing in Texas is going to load them full. I mean, isn't that fair? Because a person in California is not going to be competing with a person in Texas. Oh, but what about at Nationals, Bob? Oh, yeah, okay. At the National IDPA or at the World IDPA shoots, well, guess what? Where's the match being held? Hey, is the match going to be held in California? Well, if it is, then maybe everybody in the whole national match is downloading to 10 rounds or 8 rounds in the mag. Where is it being held? Is it being held in Oklahoma? Well, okay, so if it's being held in Oklahoma, guess what? There's no 10-round magazine capacity in Oklahoma or in many other states. So let's let all the competitors load their magazines to full capacity. Isn't that fair? Bob, what about some guns that hold 20 rounds of 9mm and other guns that only hold 17 rounds of 9mm? Well, all right. Put one rule out there. Okay? No rounds, no mags more than, I don't know, 22 rounds. And if you're going to show up with a 17-round mag and somebody else is going to show up with a 22-round mag, well, too bad. Go buy a 22-round mag. Go buy several 22-round mags for your pistol. Okay? Or whatever. I mean, I'm just picking a number out of thin air. You know, the vast majority of service pistols, and by the way, the SSP division in IDPA stands for stock service pistol. The vast majority of stock service pistols hold 17 rounds. The majority of them. Glock 17s, Glock 34s. Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm, 17 rounds. Okay? I can't remember what an XD holds. So, alright, let's say 17 round maximum for stock service pistol, because that's what a stock service pistol usually is. But I don't understand, because that there's just a few states, not the majority, but a few states that put 10 round magazine limits on their guns, that everybody has to live by those rules. You know, let's talk about 1911s. Let's talk about shooting those in IDPA, since I know the sport of IDPA better than USPSA, or better than IPSC. Okay, 1911s. Well, you know, first of all, they're all competing in a division basically with mostly other 1911s. You know, there I can understand where if somebody shows up with like a Glock 21 or an M&P 45, that you limit them to 8 plus 1 to start the stage, because, you know, what do most full-size 1911s hold? 8 plus 1. Okay? And that's what the Custom Defensive Pistol Division was really built around, the 1911 pistol. In USPSA, they call it single-stack division. Well, if you're competing in single-stack division, and you're going to be competing with other single-stack guns, so, hey, everybody's going to have what? Starting with 8 rounds in their mag or something like that? You know, you get the point. That's one of the things I like about AASA and loading the mags to full capacity. I think that's actually more fair, and only limit it in the states that are more restrictive. Now, at this point, I can't remember what the second subject was that I was going to clarify or expand on that I talked about in the previous segment. But if I remember it, I'll be sure to talk about it. I want to say something else that kind of has been on my mind a little bit, which has to do with carrying a gun. Stay with me on this, please, and please don't turn this off when I talk about this, there are two subjects I really try not to talk a lot about on this podcast. One subject is politics and the other is religion. However, once in a while I got to make an exception. So most of you know I'm a Christian. Most of you know that I am an unashamed believer in Jesus Christ as my Lord and Savior, and that I am a sinner, and that I need forgiveness every day, and that Jesus Christ, by His grace, died on the cross and shed His blood and rose again on the third day so that I could have forgiveness of my earthly sins so that I may enter the kingdom of heaven after I die. And that is my whole solid belief. All right? If you don't share my beliefs, that's okay. And I'm not trying to impose this on you. But it has to do, there's something that's been on my mind I want to talk about that has to do with carrying a gun. Because a lot of people believe that Christians shouldn't carry guns. A lot of people say that Jesus taught turning the other cheek and that He was about being passive and really didn't want people carrying weapons. I've heard that argument. I've heard other people talk about, I believe it's Luke chapter 22 or 23, where Jesus told His disciples, asked them if they had a sword, and they said no. And He said something like, well, sell your cloak, sell your coat, in other words, and buy a sword, because He knew that they were going to be facing danger. And one of the disciples said, look, here are two. And He said, well, that's enough. So a lot of people interpret that as Jesus telling His disciples to be armed. I don't know if that's true or not. Okay? The Bible never clearly states whether Christ advocated being armed or not. I read the Bible a lot. I read it nearly every day. I have a program on my iPad called Bible in 1 Year. And if you read the lesson every day, one New Testament, one Old Testament, and one Proverbs or Psalms, you'll read the Bible, the entire Bible, in a year. I'm behind, so January 1st I'm going to start all over again, and I'm going to try not to get behind next year and get through it all in 1 year. But I've done a lot of reading, both Old Testament and New Testament. I can't find any place in the Bible where God or Jesus expressly forbid the carrying of weapons or the bearing of arms. Now, if some of my pastor friends listening to my podcast can show me that or point that to me, point me in that direction, I am all ears. I'm open-minded. Most of you guys know, hey, I believe your mind's like a parachute. It works best when it's open, right? And I'm an open-minded guy. So you guys know I've been corrected before on this podcast, and I'm open to correction. And I will take back whatever I say that is incorrect, because I want this to be as accurate of a podcast for you, the listener, as I can make it. That's my mission. So if a pastor friend of mine, or if you're a good biblical scholar, and you can show me where the Bible expressly forbids the carrying of weapons, I think it's acceptable for us to carry weapons. Now, it says, thou shalt not murder. I don't believe that defending your life is murder. Now, can somebody scripturally show me where it is murder? I believe in the right to life. How many of you listening to this podcast believe in the right to life? And I'm not talking about the political right to life. Okay, well, I mean, it might be a little bit like it, but how many of you believe in the right to life? I'm not just talking about abortion. I'm talking about everyone's right to live. I mean, I am against abortion as well. I do believe that those babies have a right to live, and I do believe that they are a human being when they're in the womb. But whether you believe that or not, don't you believe that once a person is on this earth, that they have a right to life, and they have a right to continue to protect that life? I do. And, you know, Jesus says, I have come to give life and to give it abundantly. I know He talked about turning the other cheek, and that's always kind of confused me. So to my pastor friends or my biblical scholar friends, you know, when Jesus taught about turning the other cheek, I don't... If somebody can help me, show me how that has to do with carrying weapons or not carrying guns, you know, was he trying to say be passive? Because there are other times where he did not say to be passive. He didn't teach that. So I'd love to get some good clarification on that from somebody. You can send me a voicemail. The voicemail number is 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. You can also go to my website, handgunworld.com. Handgunworld.com. There is a call me button. And you can put your phone number in there and get hooked up. Hey, by the way, you can get an email notification every time I put out a new episode. So subscribe to email notifications at handgunworld.com. It'll just tell you whenever I put out a new podcast. Kind of give you a little reminder that there's a new episode out there to listen to. If you like this show, if you like what I do and I help you out and it makes sense to you and it's something that you like to keep on listening to, you know, you notice I don't run a whole bunch of commercials from a whole bunch of product sponsors. I don't want to inundate you. Hey, I'm in sales and I'm used to every day dealing with other people who are inundated by salespeople. And so I try to be respectful of that. And I don't want to do that on my show. So if you don't mind supporting the podcast, and there's a way you can do it without spending any extra money. How cool is that? If you're doing Christmas shopping, and it's the Christmas shopping season, and you're going to buy something on Amazon, would you do me a favor? Every time you do this, and please do it every time you go to Amazon. Please don't save this in your browser, because I've learned that doesn't always work so well. Every time you're going to buy something on Amazon, do three things first. Three real quick things. Takes you 5 seconds. Go to handgunworld.com. Go to my Amazon store and click my Amazon link. Do that. And then do your Amazon shopping. You know, log into your account or search for products. Do your search for products first. Then buy it. And then, you know, log in to pay for it and all that other kind of stuff. Even if you have an Amazon Prime account. That way Amazon, not you, but Amazon pays me a little bit for advertising for them. And hey, that helps support this show. A lot of you do it. And I thank you, thank you, thank you very much for you doing that. So again, it's the Christmas shopping season. Yes, Christmas. I'm not politically correct. I'm going to say it again. Christmas. You know, and by the way, if you're a Jewish person or you're a Muslim person, I'm not trying to offend you. Happy Hanukkah if you're a Jewish person. I don't know what to say if you're a Muslim person, but what I'll say is happy whatever your Muslim holiday is, if there is one. I don't know. I'm not trying to offend you, but guess what? It's also Christmas this month. So I'm going to say Merry Christmas, and you're probably doing Christmas shopping. And if you're going to buy something for somebody or for yourself on Amazon, please do it through my Amazon store. You can also become a member of our Shooters Club. I just added it up, and we have 57, mostly videos, some audios, 57 podcasts that have never been put on this public show. Most of them are videos, like 45 or 46 of them are videos. I just put up a recent half-hour video on holsters, and we just put up a bunch of footage from our Beyond Concealed Carry or Advanced class. And more are going to be released towards the end of this month. Two more videos. So great, great instructional videos and some good instructional audio podcasts. Only $8 a month. You know what? I figured that out. Folks, it's 14 cents a day. How about that? Really? 14 cents a day. What do you have to forego to save $8 a month so you can support myself and Ben Branham and get some educational, really good educational material on firearms? It's not that hard. $75 a year if you want to save a little bit of money. $8 a month. Join the Shooters Club. And on Christmas Eve Day, You could win an XDS 9mm pistol. You don't even have to make a purchase to win. All you got to do is make a 45-second video. Either send it to me or send it to Ben Branham. You can email it to me, bob@handgunworld.com or ben@modernselfprotection.com. Ask us a question. Tell us what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, what you hate about our podcast, whatever. You'll still get entered into the contest. If you're a Shooters Club member, you get two numbers. Or you can make a free video and get one number. You could win an XDS pistol. You could win an On Your Six Designs Kydex holster for the gun of your choice. Five people are going to win that. And we got five extra magazines and two holsters for the gun that we're giving away, too. So isn't that cool? So join the Shooters Club, and I'd very much appreciate that. And, of course, my email, as always, bob@handgunworld.com. Thank you very much, folks, for listening to another episode of the Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click. Or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye. To join the bloody fray. Oh, and the Thompson Gunner.